Where's your favorite place to take College Game Day? And I say every time, Eugene, Oregon.
Welcome, Duck fans, where and whenever you are watching or listening. This is the Once a Duck podcast, where we bring you up to date with current and former University of Oregon athletes and give you never-before-heard stories about your favorite teams and moments in Duck history. It's that week, guys. We're back after a bye week. College Game Day is coming to Eugene, Oregon. There's going to be a toga party in the quad celebrating Animal House. I'm your host, Nick Cody. I can't wait to be there. This is what I'll be wearing for the game, Sam, as it will be a breast cancer awareness uniform week. I see you've already got the jersey on. My co-host, Samuel Chidrick-Smith, how are you doing today? How excited are you for this game? I know now that you're going to be able to make it. You're going to be there for College Game Day, and we're going to shake things up. So how are you feeling about it?
You know, Nick, weeks like this make me want to shout. I am so darn excited for this matchup this week, College Game Day. A great matchup between Oregon and UCLA. What's going to be a top 10 showdown in Austin Stadium. We have so much to get to today, both about this game and so much else going on in college football. I'm really excited for this episode, really excited for this coming weekend.
A little bit louder now?
Just a little bit louder now.
Oh, man, it's going to be a loud one in Autzen Stadium. We've got Coach Kelly, my coach for 4 years, coming back to Autzen Stadium for his third time, second time with actual fans in attendance. And I'm excited to hear how the Autzen crowd lets them hear it with College Game Day there and with a 12:30 kickoff. I mean, it's sometimes really, really tough when you've got College Game Day coming there at 4 a.m. to sustain the party the entire time. And the last time I was there for that was that Stanford game in 2018. And when you have to do that with a night game, that is rough. But the team is going to be ready to go. The fans are going to be ready no matter what. The excitement in Eugene is going to be unmatched. I can't wait for it. But looks like it's going to be a rainy one. So prepare maybe a poncho, something with your toga out there. Try and get ready. But make sure you come out in full force.
You know, it doesn't rain in Autzen Stadium.
Definitely.
It doesn't happen. It sprinkles.
It's that quad you got to worry about. That's all I'm saying.
Wet.
But it's going to be exciting. I can't wait to see as many of you there as possible. Give us a shout out. Let us know. And if you get pictures with us, you know, give a tag to Once a Duck as well. But we've got lots to talk about in terms of UCLA in this matchup. But first and foremost, I thought we'd kick around our lightning yellow around this week with let's talk some NFL Ducks and what they've been able to do, because hey, we don't have a game to talk about. Why not just break down their guys that have been doing pretty well? And there's quite a few of them to go over, but hey, I'm putting 2 minutes on the clock. You want to go first?
I'll absolutely go first.
All right, let's go.
You know what? We got to start with the NFC Offensive Player of the Week, Marcus Mariota, quarterback of the Atlanta Falcons, rocking the sweet looking throwbacks. 13 of 14 passing, 129 yards, and a pair of touchdowns. That goes along with 50 yards on the ground, another touchdown as well. Atlanta was able to get a big win over San Francisco, thanks in large part to Mr. Mariota.
Yep. Well, another one of my teammates from that year Mariota really, really took off as a freshman, took the reins. DeForest Buckner, man, he had another great performance. He had one sack, five combined tackles in the Colts wins over the Jaguars, and he's just become a phenom. Eric Armstead, hurt right now, would also be a phenom if, San Francisco weren't dealing with so many injuries.
You know, another one that I'm going to get to right here, I'm going to stick with the offense because I know there's another defensive player you definitely want to talk about. So I'm going to talk about Justin Herbert getting a Monday night win over the Denver Broncos. It wasn't a pretty game, but sometimes you just need to do enough, and he did. 37 completed passes, 37 for 57, 238 yards for Herbert. It was a tough game, but they were able to get a division win, and you'll always take it.
Yep, and back on the defensive side of the football, man, got to talk about the impact Kayvon Thibodeau had at the end, stripping Lamar Jackson for the fumble and the sack, and ending the game with one of the most fantastic sack dances I've seen in a long time.
Well, man, that was just a fantastic play for him. I'll stick on the defensive end. Let's go with another guy recently at the University of Oregon, Javon Holland, the safety for Miami, 5 tackles as well as a couple of punt returns this week. That Miami Dolphins team, they weren't able to get the win this past week, but man, under Coach Mike McDaniels, that team is looking really, really strong.
Yeah, another guy I want to give a shout out to because of just all he's overcome to get where he is, Farrell Brown out there playing with, ironically, the Cleveland Browns, but he got his first 2 receptions as a member of Cleveland Browns and 21 yards and also got a tackle, but it was a loss to New England, but hey, man, great to see him out on the football field because anybody that knows his story, it's amazing to see him bounce back the way he has.
Well, another guy who played in that exact game for the against Miami, I should say, in that game against Javon Holland, another defender, Troy Dye, linebacker, special team star for that team. He was on 25 special team snaps, and we love our special teamers here. Seeing him be able to put in that type of work with Minnesota, really impressive stuff from him.
Yep, and that's all we got for our lightning rounds. Playing guys we missed, lots of honorable mention to go around. Just got to say, especially living up here in Seattle, did my first comedy set on Monday in a Justin Herbert Chargers jersey, giving a shout-out to our guest last week, Daryl Hawkins. And it not only looked good, but all the Russell Wilson haters really, really appreciated it. So got to give a shout-out to Daryl and Justin Herbert pulling off the overtime win against the Broncos. Him gutting out his injury this season has been it's been tough to watch, but man, he's been continually impressive even through in spite of all the injury.
Well, you know, I don't think there was ever a question about Justin Herbert's toughness. He's absolutely proved it this season playing through the rib injury that honestly would probably keep me from doing this podcast for a couple of weeks. So impressive that he's been able to compete in NFL ball games under those circumstances.
Yeah, it's been really impressive, and we don't give enough props to our NFL Ducks, but hey, when we get bye weeks and opportunities like this, we got to take it. But we do have a big game this week. We have obviously College Game Day, but Chip coming back to town, that we could talk about all day, you know, especially my era of Oregon, being able to see what it was like to play for Chip Kelly and how it seems he's evolved. And I'm most interested to see is what his approach is towards going into Autzen Stadium again, because he has not been successful here the previous 2 times, although the last game was a lot closer than we probably would have liked in 2020. But the advantage of Autzen Stadium and having the fans there and what that means, I mean, time will only tell, but I imagine that has to be a huge difference. It was interesting for me to listen to Coach Kelly using simulated crowd noise for the first time this season. And just thinking about how just regularly that was a part of our routine already, but obviously playing down in the Rose Bowl, sometimes you got to get used to quiet nights, I guess. So it's an adjustment.
It absolutely is. And you know what? Props to Chip and what he's been able to do at UCLA in his time there. This is a team that has progressively improved. They have shown it more and more every single year. And just looking at the scores between Oregon and UCLA over that time span, you can see exactly the improvement that's been made. The first time Chip came back into Autzen Stadium, UCLA got blown out 42-21. The previous 2 matchups, though, in 2020 and then in 2021, those games were decided by a combined 6 points. Every single year, this UCLA team, I should say, is getting better. They are improving. DTR is becoming a better quarterback. I know we're going to dive much deeper in our second segment into that team, into what they've been able to do. But seeing Chip be able to right a ship at UCLA that for a really long time, I mean, when was the last time UCLA was in the top 10? Really, it's been a while. To see him be able to right that ship has really, really been impressive, and credit to him for being able to do so. And you know what, Nick, I know that in your time at Oregon, UCLA, Oregon, there were a couple of big matchups. The 1-09 that we talked about with Daryl last week. Obviously, the blowout in 2010 and then the inaugural Pac-12 championship in 2011. Those were all Chip Kelly games, all games that he was in control of things at Oregon. And I think it'll be really, really interesting to see what he can do coming back for a second time to Autzen Stadium.
Well, technically third time, but
Second time with fans. That's what
second time with fans. Yep. Well, my cardboard cutout was there. He was trying his best to distract from the sidelines. But yeah, it's been really great, especially amid some, you know, rumors that, you know, their AD wanted him out at some point, and then to basically flip that entire narrative around. And now, especially with USC and UCLA exiting for the Big 10 in 2024, I mean, that adds a whole extra layer to this, where normally this rivalry would be something we'd expect to see again, but this could perhaps be the last time that UCLA comes to Autzen Stadium. And you know that in terms of scheduling, it's not like they're going to do us any favors or us them. So this could be potentially the last time we see UCLA in Autzen Stadium. So all those things add a little bit extra to this ball game.
It absolutely does. And I think it is genuinely a shame that it will be the last time that UCLA and Oregon meet up in Autzen Stadium. There have been so many great games throughout the years played between these two teams in Autzen Stadium. It really is just a matchup that consistently has brought energy, whether it was that 2000 matchup where Oregon, after a couple of straight years of tough losses to UCLA, was able to get a big 29-10 win. That 2010 season, the first time coming in on a Thursday night, ESPN bringing out the 3D cameras, the number one Oregon Ducks taking on UCLA in that 60-13 absolute drubbing. The inaugural Pac-12 championship game held in Autzen Stadium, a game that I believe a little closer in that final score of 49-31 indicated, but you guys were really able to step on the gas there at the end. These two teams have played a lot of historic games, a lot of great games over the years. We've talked about them before. We'll talk about them again. And Nick, I would really like to start with the game we mentioned last week. We heard Daryl's perspective on it. I would love to hear a little bit of yours of that day going down to the Rose Bowl and honestly how that compared to the next year against UCLA.
Well, first and foremost, my favorite story about it is positive, was finally after the game, because it felt like everything was going against us in that game. I didn't have a great game myself. It was my very first start, but my favorite memory is we get the win, we're walking out, and Rick Neuheisel gets on the microphone and basically apologizes to the entire student body. And I don't remember exactly what he said, but, you know, always a good media guy, but he was savvy up there. But it was still just the concept of it was so foreign to me, with a guy like Coach Kelly is my coach. I think the only time I could see him addressing the fans is, oh, yeah, we've seen it. Hey, shut up. But, it was just so funny to think, they didn't have a great attendance even then. We've seen that still be a struggle in the LA market for them, you know, right now to get home attendance records up. But he basically went over and like, yeah, we really promised to perform better next week, and just, you know, basically begged the fans to not give up on him. And that's when you were like, wow, this is such a different place. The Rose Bowl and the way to appeal to that fan base is so different for football. And Chips had to overcome a lot of that, but I still remember that from that game in 2009. It was my first start. I took a helmet to the knee that sometimes I still feel to this day. I think I had a false start on maybe the first or second drive right after Carson York had just had a false start. So Coach Greatwood was just chewing us all out from the sidelines. Not a great bunch of memories from that day. I remember we had practiced a counter pass that we had maybe done in practice like 5-10 times, but like never against against a practice squad defense, and never really in certain scenarios like red zone. You wouldn't want to do that. It was always somewhere from the midfield or kind of going down near the 30-40 yard line. And we ran it from our 1 yard line or something like that. And that was the interception for a touchdown. And the funniest part about that is, it being a counter, you're pulling the backside guard and tackle to simulate the run play. And so me and Mark Asper are just running the opposite way, and all we hear is the crowd go nuts. And we're like, oh no, that can't be good. Is it a sack? And you kind of see the replay and you go, yeah, that's about the worst possible thing that could happen. So I still remember a lot more of the negative plays than the positive plays. But to end on a positive note, and we talked about it, Kenyon Barner really coming out, setting the tone, unfortunately upsetting what was the legend that would be Darryl Hawkins. But he came out and you saw that patented stiff arm, took it all the way down there. And then the other highlight play that used to be on the ESPN college football banner all the time was that Jeff Mail celebration after his touchdown. And I always remember pointing that out to people and being like, remember that game? It's my first start. And then not keep it, like keeping all those negative details out of it, just being like, yeah, that game.
Well, Nick, we both know it's all about the framing, and I'm glad you framed that one correctly. A quick Neuheisel note that I love, and it has to do with the game the next season, is you mentioned it. Rick Neuheisel was never a guy who was at a loss for words. He was always somebody who had something to say, always somebody who could answer just about any question out there. But after that ball game in 2010, that 60-13 just drubbing through and through, his quote is one of my favorite quotes from any college football coach ever. Simply, that was impressive. I'll leave it at that.
And it was. I think that's the most I played left guard in a game, because I remember me and Darian Weems and Ramson Golpassion and all those guys getting a ton of reps that game, late in the game. And it was one of those games where the practices that week were, you know, we had gone so hard that when we got out there, it was easy. You know, UCLA was, you know, really struggling to keep up with us and Autzen. And everything we had seen on tape, you know, dead giveaways about, especially when they were going to twist and stuff. I still remember seeing, you know, people look at clips that they posted on, you know, that I'm tagged on Facebook and stuff. It's like, oh, look at, you know, Weems and Cody picking up this twist. But it was just stuff that, man, they're tipping it off in film and we already knew it. So it was just one of those moments where you realized and trust in the process so much that Chip had created that, man, we knew exactly what they were going to do as they were doing it. And we barely had to communicate on the front line just to know it, because we were all five as one out there, no matter which five it was.
Well, also, correct me if I'm wrong. That was a Thursday night ball game. That was also coming off a bye week, correct?
I believe so, yeah. Otherwise, yeah. I think I lucked out and never had to have a Thursday game after a Saturday, unless I'm forgetting something. I think I had a Friday game after a Saturday, never Thursday.
So coming off a bye week with that extra time to prepare, obviously you end up blowing them out. But talk a little bit about, if you can, what that extra week of preparation looked like. Was it a real rest your body, watch film type of deal? Or were you guys out there preparing for the Bruins for the entirety of the 2 weeks?
No, I wouldn't. That faceless opponent mentality usually meant in your own world, you were studying some film, maybe getting the group together, pre-meetings, pre-workouts. But, you know, especially with the shortened bye week, technically, you're really just staggering your schedule. And then those couple extra days were a lot for healing, preparation. And then, you know, a great thing that Chip really established in his time there was there wasn't a lot of down or off time. There weren't off practices. So if it wasn't, you know, the ones practicing, even on a Friday practice before a game, there would be a scout scrimmage. A developmental squad scrimmage is what I believe they started calling it. And it was legit, you know, guys were padded up out there on days that travel squad was all, you know, in their shorts and jerseys and stuff and going through walkthroughs, but they were legit playing, you know, not full on tackle, but really, really good hard practicing. And so you get a couple of those days to stagger in there to get guys more treatment, to get them healthier. And the guys that haven't been getting a lot of playing time, they get a lot of reps to develop.
Well, Nick, obviously, after that 2010 season, 2011, inaugural Pac-12 championship game held in Autzen Stadium. The only Pac-12 championship game held in Autzen Stadium, but what a great one it would be. I saw a tweet today. I think it was a Legalized Quack tweet. Deion Jordan would still be doing 25 to life due to the hit he had on their quarterback in that ball game. He wasn't the only one to absolutely punch UCLA in the face, though. The entire team just came out with a 49-31 victory. Whether it was the fans, whether it was all the Oregon logos being covered up by Pac-12 banners, whether it was the cold and the fog that hung over that entire night, what sticks out most to you about that inaugural Pac-12 team?
Oh, well, it's coming off of mentioning a shortened week. I'm coming off the Civil War game, formerly known as, where I had my ankle rolled up on because Ty Burrell told me to break a leg. And I thought I almost did. It was pretty close. I was glad had the old ankle braces on. But I had one less day to recover and actually had by the end of the episode, I'll go pull it out. I had to have a brace for my ankle built into my cleat to be able to play in that game and even all the way to the Rose Bowl. That's how bad I had rolled this ankle. And man, I still remember, just especially with the cold, getting myself ready for that game, getting through warmups was just, it was a struggle in itself. And then constantly, you know, everybody knows, like, I was one of the sweatiest guys of my time. You take any single photograph, I'm the sweatiest dude out on the football field. And that was really, really tough with that cold, because you'd get to the sidelines, and even with like the nice heated benches they brought out for that game, and putting your helmet on like a, you know, like a dehumidifier device, like, it was still so cold that like I felt my sweat like it was freezing on top of me before I got to the bench. And and you had to get back out there, do it all over again, another series. That was just a different challenge. So I don't know. Really, really enjoyed the being able to have it in Autzen and have that large number of people there. But man, it was a cold, cold night. And then having the stage that they pulled out that didn't have any reinforcement on the top, oh my goodness, it was slippery, pretty dangerous. I'm surprised all of us survived.
Well, we're glad that you did, because you guys were able to go win a Rose Bowl after that. And that meant a lot to everybody watching, I guarantee that. I remember sitting on my living room floor watching that 2011 Pac-12 championship game, so excited as to what it meant, seeing all the pictures, everybody with the roses in their mouths after that ball game. A really, really special one. And it was a part of an seven game straight that Oregon beat UCLA, one of the absolute longest streaks in this series overall. It's actually a very, very competitive series. UCLA with a slight 39-31 advantage all time. Oregon, though, as we saw from the Fox Football Post earlier this week, since 2008, Oregon's only lost to UCLA one time, and it was that 2017 game. Justin Herbert was injured. He wasn't playing at all. Oregon lost that one. But besides that, in recent memory, for the last nearly 15 years, Oregon has been extremely successful in these matchups, including some of these later matchups that we talked about it a little bit last week, but I want to get into it now. 18, 20, 21, and now 22. Big uniform games for the Ducks. Huge moments. Whether it is this neon black pink that we're looking at this week, the eggshell last year, the Ohana jerseys in 2020, still mad they weren't able to have a produced version of that, a retail version that we could have all gotten our hands on. Or 2018, when the team was able to pull out those Jordan jerseys that were also so much fun and flew off the shelves. Nick, the question I got to ask you is, of all of these jerseys, which is the one you would have wanted to wear?
Oh, that's so easy. The Ohana, especially, you know, my family really being a part of the, you know, Polynesian culture, and being a part of the KK Kui Foundation down in Vancouver and Portland area. And that just, you know, I don't know. I really enjoyed it. And then even more after hearing Daryl's description of the design, and everything about it definitely screams Black Panther, superhero, make your players look like stars. And they did. And the only shame about it being, you know, a completely empty stadium, and like you said, not being able to produce those jerseys. But I got one of the t-shirts, and man, that thing still looks pretty awesome too. So I probably wouldn't have looked that great in it, but it would have felt great.
Oh, I have no doubt it would have felt great. I think that these were a string of really, really fun uniforms. I remember in 2018, the day that the Jordan jerseys came out, I had a group chat on my phone that was just everybody posting the picture of them and theirs as different times throughout classes. And I think a couple people during class just got up, left the building, walked across the street to the Duck store, put down the credit card, and walked back with a new piece of merch. I'll post them after this when we release the episode, but I'm sure that we have tons of pictures of everybody rocking their number 23 black Oregon Jordan jerseys. Those were so much fun. And then the Ohana you mentioned, so fantastic. Just really one of the all-time Oregon jerseys that I wish would have been made retail. So fantastic. But they made right with the eggshell jersey. That's right up behind us. The breast cancer awareness, I'm wearing it right now. Can't wait to be wearing it in Autzen this coming week. Such good looks, and it really is great that Oregon chooses UCLA to pull these out against for a few reasons. Number one, and one that was mentioned on Twitter by Jonah, one of the best people when it comes to your Oregon football uniform knowledge out there. He was posting about how fantastic it is that Oregon chooses UCLA because of how UCLA dresses always. The gold helmet, the white jersey, the gold pants is almost a guarantee when they're coming to play in your building. And it's really easy to play off of that for Oregon, whether it is to go with the blacks, the neon, something that pops really well. That's always going to look good against them. Plus, when I went to Oregon, a big reason why they used to give out shirts, used to have fun uniforms, whether it was for basketball or football, it was because UCLA for a long time was either an Adidas or an Under Armour school. For a very long time. And that's always when Nike wants to flex its muscles the hardest. It's fun to flex against yourself when you can, but when you can flex against the opponent, that's always a big moment, and it was something that they were definitely very anxious to do. And lastly, Chip Kelly coming back to town. What other way to get everybody just a little extra hyped up than to have something a little fly going on?
Well, and even before Coach Kelly, it was, I know you mentioned on Twitter, one of you, and make sure you're following him if you're not, at Samuel101TS. I know one of the uniforms you had mentioned that, despite losing, looked pretty cool going down to the Rose Bowl in 2017, and pretty much something we could talk about with our next guest, but I like the look of those. It always kind of just brings it down a little bit more, and you remember it a little bit less when you're losing, and especially when you're losing with a backup quarterback.
Well, what I loved about that look is, to my knowledge, that was the last time Oregon went with a three-color combo, which is something that I absolutely love. I love the three-color combo, whether it was the yellow, green, and black from when you played Washington your senior year in 2012, whether it's some of the more interesting looks that Oregon's been able to have throughout the year, the carbon fiber, white, slate gray pants combo that was used in the national championship game, whether it is the black, yellow, greens that were used a lot during the Bilotti era. Some really, really fun looks can be done with it. And just having that chrome dome, that beautiful mirrored helmet with the white jersey, the apple green pants, something that just absolutely popped down in the Rose Bowl. I think it's always good for Oregon to go with something like that down there, especially against a team that is gold, blue, very good offsetting colors for whatever Oregon wants to do. The one thing that would always get on my nerves just a little bit, especially during basketball season, Oregon loves to wear yellow at home during basketball season. We all know it. When they would wear yellow and UCLA would wear blue, it would look a little bit like a UCLA inter squad scrimmage, just a little tiny bit. But Oregon, successful in a lot of those matchups, successful as well in these football games. And I'm very, very excited to see if that can carry over to this coming week. As we've said, from 2008 through 14, nothing but wins for the Ducks. To 18 on, the same. Very much hoping that streak can continue this coming week.
Yep, and would really love to see this be, you know, the third breast cancer awareness uniform. Break that 1-1 tie in favor of, you know, Duckies and in the win column because, I know everybody's still that. The only resilience I've ever heard about the pink uniforms is they remind people of that Arizona game. And, you gotta get one more win to at least wipe that taste out of people's mouths, I think. And I think we're set to do it. And I'm excited to talk with our next guest because he had a lot of involvement. As Daryl mentioned last week, they always try and involve the seniors and the senior leadership council. And he's one of the biggest leaders from that 2017 team onwards is defensive tackle Jordan Scott. Joining us now, defensive tackle from the 2017 class, coming with Willie Taggart. Defensive tackle Jordan Scott, one of my favorite players. Thank you for joining us, man.
No problem, man. I'm honored to be here.
Oh, man. Well, it's an honor to have you. And first question I have to ask is what was it like to come to Oregon sight unseen? I know a little bit about your story. You know, you get an offer rescinded from Florida. Willie Taggart coming into Oregon, brand new coach, first staff in a long time. What was your impression of Oregon before and after? And what was that like to you to go sight unseen and commit to Oregon?
I'll just say this to start. Like, you know, the Florida thing was crazy because I told, like, I went to visit my mom. Like, obviously, you know what happened, but the story behind it is I commit and then they tell my mom I'm an early graduate. So they already knew this, and they tell my mom, you know, we're going to go. It's like marrying your wife and then telling her the day before the wedding, I'm going to go and see some other women to make sure. And I try to tell her, like, that's what they can say, but anything can happen because at the end, they still in control until I get there. So yeah, Taggart and I had a relationship. Levitt had a relationship, and as soon as they got there, I was at an All-Star game in Florida when he called me and was like, I just got the job. And then Levitt called me right after. So, and what I think about Oregon before and after. Well, I had big, like, my little league coach even tweeted, like, after I graduated, like, he always used to say he wanted to go to Oregon, but he never thought that they would get an offer because they didn't offer guys in Florida, especially D linemen. So, but on the way to practice, he would ask us, and I would say Oregon or Florida. So I always wanted to be in those jerseys that they're wearing this week. That was like my dream jersey, and it's crazy. I'm about to go and watch it. I'm going. But so that was before. But once I got there, man, it blew me away, honestly. Like, I didn't know what to expect socially. I knew I was going to, like, do my job, play football, and get a degree, but socially, I didn't know what to expect, especially with the weather and how different it is from Florida. But I honestly love it, man. It's so much different than Florida, and it just opened up my mind and my eyes to a lot of different stuff. The people there were amazing during my time. Every coach that I played for was all about winning it. And that's what you want to do when you go to college football, man. You want to try to win every football game you can, have a good relationship with your teammates, and get your degree. Anything after that is a plus, and Oregon had everything plus. Jerseys, fields, equipment, everything. So I enjoyed my time, man.
Well, Jordan, I just recently graduated the University of Oregon as well. I got there in 2017, that exact same year you did. While you were out on the field, I wasn't doing nearly as much work, but I was just sitting up in that front row every single game. So it was always a pleasure to be able to watch you play, watch your teammates work. That 2017 class is just such an important class in Oregon history because it signified just a new type of guys that were coming into Eugene. I remember the day that they announced your commitment, I remember looking and going, oh my goodness, this is so much bigger, so much stronger of a guy than you're used to seeing come to Oregon, especially a guy coming up from Florida. What was it like when you first stepped on campus at Oregon? What was it like to be a part of that recruiting class that was brought in by Taggart, held the team together after he left, and then really was able to propel Oregon to success with Cristobal?
I'll just say this, man. Our class is really proud to be a Duck. Like, I know guys before were proud, but our class were like, especially the Florida guys, like, we really took that. We took it like, okay, we at Oregon. Like, this is as good as it gets. Like, so I just remember being super proud to be a Duck. Coach Taggart, like, obviously before he left, our relationship was what you want with a college coach, like, giving you every opportunity on Sunday, I mean, on Saturdays to win. So, and it was like, we already most of us were familiar with him going to USF. Some guys were committed going to USF. So it was even like, we was just proud to be at Oregon together. And then the guys from Cali, it was a great class, man. That year was really fun. We Herbert got hurt, but I thought we had a really good year and it made a difference.
Yeah, you guys definitely had a foundation there that stuck together through the Cristobal era and led to one of my favorite games of all time in Autzen Stadium. 2018, University of Washington comes in, goes to overtime, but the highlight play for me and my favorite one from your career, it's fourth down, only a couple inches that UW has to get, and you basically drive the entire offensive line back for a fumble. Talk a little bit about that moment and that game and what you remember from it.
That game was just super special because that was my first game my mom came to. So, and it was like, I knew it was a big rivalry, but it was the first time we played UW at home for me. And I knew, like, if we wanted to be one of the teams to beat in the nation, we wanted to go to the playoffs, we had to win that game. And the whole week, Coach Levitt was saying, like, you know, this is what they're going to do on fourth down. What are you going to do about it? Like, this is what they're going to do because they did it every game before, line up, try to quick snap it. So I was like, you know, hopefully I can make that play. I think I can. So I was just really happy, man. My mom was there and my teammates had me turned up. It was one of my favorite moments in my career for sure. Austin went crazy.
Oh, man, I can tell you I was definitely at that game. Remember rushing the field. Remember you guys rocking the sweet all yellow uniforms for that game. That one was a ton of fun. I also remember, I don't know if you will, Jordan, but I remember after that game, One of the best parties in University of Oregon history up on the hill afterwards. Just one of the best celebrations anyone could have been a part of. That was such a great time, man. But you always seemed like the kind of guy that stepped up in those rivalry games, whether it was that play against Washington. You also had a huge game the next year against Washington. Whether it was playing the Huskies, playing the Beavers, playing games against the Cardinal, how did it feel stepping up in those big moments and playing those big Oregon rivals?
It always felt good, but I remember Coach Levy used to say a story that he had in his coaching past, but what stuck with us was, like, he would always say, I won't never let my teammates down. Like, he would just say that was something you should be repeating on the field. Like, I will never let my teammates down. And that's how we got so close, because it's like, I want to make a play so everybody can be turned. I want to make a play so we can win. It's like for the program. So when you get it like that, and everybody's playing their role, not trying to do too much, but just, you know, making plays when they come. And most of those moments, man, I remember for the rest of my life, honestly. But that Washington one with my mom there, that was real special. And then when they did storm the field, I was like, wow, this is college. So that was fun, man.
Yeah, and I stormed the field as well. Got in a little bit of trouble for that. I tried to go with the team back in the locker room. But I got a call from Hawk after that, and I wised up, got my act together. But not just great games, but you got to be a part of a great leadership council. And we mentioned it with our guest last week, Daryl Hawkins, but you had a lot of input on these upcoming uniforms. You had already mentioned that the breast cancer awareness uniforms were a huge reason that you saw Oregon and were like, man, I want to go there and I want to wear that gear. But what was it like giving your input into the uniforms, and what do you think about this week's upcoming fit?
The uniforms, man, it's like, I saw them. I remember it was nighttime here, because it's always nighttime, basically. Whenever the big time game, they always make it super late, and it's almost 12 o'clock over here. But I remember seeing that game, and I just was like, yeah. I like Marcus Mariota. Everybody in Florida, like, love DeAnthony Thomas and the running back, 21. LaMichael James. Everybody loved LaMichael James. So it was like, and Lil Lee, everybody wanted those numbers. You know, like, when you're in Lil Lee, that's what you want. You want to play for the teams with the players that make the biggest plays. And DeAnthony Thomas, 80, 70, just long plays. And that's what everybody want to do. So I felt like the jerseys was, like, extra motivation. Like, you can go here and play in the best stuff. And then I already knew that the facility was going to be top-notch, because it's Nike. It's like football Disneyland.
Jordan, this week, again, Oregon is doing the breast cancer awareness game. It's going to be a huge one against UCLA. College game day is going to be in town. It really is just going to be a massive affair down in Eugene. We're both going to be very excited to be up there and check it out. Do you remember anything from that meeting with Daryl Hawkins? We had him in here last week, and he was talking about how cool it was to be able to communicate with you guys, be able to talk about whether it was these jerseys or the Ohana jerseys or the eggshell jerseys and the stuff that he had been working on of late. Talk a little bit about what it was like to be in those meetings and be a part of the group that was really kind of setting the course for how Oregon football would be perceived moving forward.
Okay. Well, first to start, that group was really handpicked, and you had to be on the leadership council almost to be in it. And I was proud to be on the leadership. That was like when, you know, we got a shirt that said leadership, and it was just like the coaches, and I wore it all the time around the facility. Like, I took that serious because I wanted to be one of the guys to change the culture. I took that serious. But that group was special because on my first year, I used to watch Matrell and guys like stay after. And that's what, you know, we had a team meeting, and the guys would stay after and talk to the Nike guys. And Daryl was there when I went my first time sophomore year. And I told them, they asked me what I think, and I said, the breast cancer jersey has to come back. Like, that's the one. Like, obviously, you know, the Ohana was crazy. And that's great. But the breast cancer one means a lot to actually, like, bring it back. And how I knew that the wings on the shoulder would go. And then the helmet, yeah. So I felt like that was the one I wanted to see Oregon wear. And bring back that swag.
Yeah, and ironically, it's against another matchup with UCLA. You had a couple of them, one in those Ohana jerseys. What do you remember about going against UCLA, particularly anything about preparing for a Chip Kelly-coached offense?
They're going to go up-tempo. And it might not be every series or every play, but, like, in situations where they feel like they can, they go up-tempo. And, you know, that's Pac-12 football. Everybody does it at some point. But, you know, that one of those games you got to be ready for. Because DTR, I played against him. He's good. And he's fast. So you got to have a contain. And what else? Oh, the trick plays, like the creative plays with a where you can get running back doing a jet sweep or fake jet sweep to the throw it back to the quarterback. So you just got to be on your toes against teams like that.
Jordan, while you were at Oregon, I think something really big happened within the program, and it was that there was almost a transition from the team that had been known as the fast team in the nation to a team that was both fast and extremely tough, extremely gritty. What was it like being in the building, a part of that team, while that culture shift was underway? And how do you think that that has stood throughout the Cristobal era and now into the Dan Lanning era?
I think it starts with bringing in the right guys. Like, you see the coaching staff has changed a lot, but once you get a group of good guys and then you get more and more, you have the right guys on the team. It's all about the team, man. Once the team gels right, that's how it goes. But I'll say that it was very important to me, like I said earlier, to be one of the guys that came in and was serious about changing the culture. Because when I got there, I didn't even know that Washington beat us at home 74-21 or whatever the score was. Like, they would play that in the weight room in the mornings when you walk in. Like, that's the first thing you see. And I would be like, I did not know that because I didn't watch that game. So when I first walk in, I'm like, that was the mentality. And the coaches made sure that first year to know, like, that's not the brand of football we're playing no more. Like, you got to be proud to be here. You got to take it serious. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be one of the guys to change the coach.
Yeah, I think you certainly helped do that. You led a lot of great defenses. You got your degree in, I believe, 3 years. And then you got an opportunity.
Yes, sir.
You got an opportunity in the NFL and with the Vikings. And my favorite highlight of yours in the pros, getting that interception. What was that like in an NFL level and against professionals?
It was really like every D lineman dream to get a pick in every level because, you know, then you think you fast and you might get a touchdown. But I'll just say, like, you know, I always hustle to the ball. And when you hustle to the ball, great plays happen. And I even run to the ball at practice. If it's on the ground, you just got to run to the ball, hope something go your way. And I seen it, caught it, and, like, my teammates, like, I caught it and fell, and I got hit. And they're like, bro, you fumbled, but at least you recovered it. Why you didn't keep the ball? And I thought about it. I'm like, this is one of the moments in your life you have to take that ball and put some tape around it and mark it in it. Because I'm looking back now, I mean, like, I enjoy my time in the NFL, and I wish, hoping one day that I get back in there. But, you know, when you're a kid and you in elementary and you tell your teacher what you want to be and you actually achieve it, no matter what it is, it could be the smallest thing. But it obviously the NFL is like a small chance, but it's the same as an astronaut or anything. If you tell somebody at that age what you want to be and you actually achieve it, you feel way different about it than if it was something else. And that's what's special about playing in the NFL. 99% of the guys had that dream as a child. Like, there's no way you work that hard. You sacrifice all the time, all the hours you put in. You know, your body aches, but you go out there and have one of the best game of your life. Like, you play through those if you want to be a great player. And I just thought, like, you know, I didn't get to finish the season. Like, it was just, I caught that pick and I'm like, man, I'm playing well. Like, I'm going to make a team. Like, that's how I'm thinking going into the game. Like, it's the second preseason game. Guys getting cut that first week. And I made it, so I'm like, I got the IR, and, you know, it was special to me even make the IR, though, because that mean I was worth keeping around. So I play well while I was healthy, and I'm going to play well with my next opportunity. But, man, that pick was very special. Like, it just validates everything I just talked about. Like when you went to middle school, when you played Little League, you told people you wanted to be in the NFL. Like it's just special.
I mean, Jordan, I know we're both very hopeful that and excited for that next opportunity you're going to get. We have no doubt that something's definitely coming down the line, especially for a guy who's always been willing to work as hard as you are. Another guy who was on that Minnesota team, a guy, Troy Dye, you played with here at Oregon. He was
huge Troy Dye fan.
We both are too, man. We love the guy. we got to say, he was one of just so many big personality guys on that Oregon roster for those years that you were there. You were obviously one of them. There were so many people and players who everybody loved from a football perspective as well as just as people. Who are some of your favorite teammates that you had the chance to play with at Oregon? Who are some of the guys that you still talk to regularly?
This is going to be a long list, man. We keep in touch. A lot of us keep in touch, but like, I would say like Arion, Ugo, Justin Hollins, Jalen Jelks, Henry Mondu, Fowler, me, Troy, everybody, man. Like, it's going to be a list of people, but I'll keep going. Like, even young guys, Kayvon, Ajax, he transferred. We still talk. Like, it's just – it was different when I was there, but – Nick, Demo, Dimitri, they would, like, guys leaving and you still talk to them because it's like those guys you went to battle with. So, I mean, it's different when you have that connection. Locker room every day, you see people throwing up and you like, come on, bro, we got to make the time. So it's like accountability, man, creates that relationship. But like you was asking about Troy, bro. Troy, one of my favorite teammates ever. Like, I see him and I'm like, this dude, a linebacker? And we do inside run drill at practice, and he flashing in the hole. I'm like, all right. As a linebacker, so when I got there, you know, that's new to me because I'm playing with heavy dudes in Florida. Nobody built like Troy at linebacker in Florida. So I'm like, we out here, like, there's some athletes out here. And I was always, because, you know, I'm the nose guard, so he's the person standing right behind me. So if he's not making plays, I'm doing something wrong because that's the defense. And he would make those plays and – punching the ball out against Wazoo one hand while you on the ground, like, that's special. So that was my dude, man. And I lived with him when I was at Minnesota. Like, that's how close we were.
Man, that's great to hear. And that's why we call it once a duck, always a duck. We know what that brotherhood means and, you know, how hard you have to work to achieve that kind of bond. It lasts forever. On the subject of Troy Dye, something else you guys elevated from the program. Now, Shout started when I was at Oregon, way back in the young, old times. But you guys took it to a completely different level. What's it like for you when you hear that song?
It's funny. I just heard it the other day at a restaurant with my girlfriend. And I was like, this is the song that if you hear this in Oregon, we turned up right now. It's funny because, like, on the Jumbotron, especially my first time, I had no idea what was going on. And then once I learned about it, and I remember moments like Troy out there in the all yellow, just going crazy. Like, it's one of those songs, man, that especially when you leave, if you hear it, you just, like, you bob your head. Like, you know, you remember those times where a big stop on third down and they're punting and they're playing Shout. Like, it's one of those songs. So, and it is one step always does, man. I loved it. I really did, man. I just – so much different than what I was expecting, like, to actually go through, and I really enjoyed my time there. I really did.
Well, Jordan, another moment that involves dancing of yours that I have a special place in my heart for. It was your freshman season, my freshman year at Oregon against Oregon State, a huge what ends up being a massive blowout game. I know you know the exact moment I'm talking about, man. Soulja Boy comes playing through the speakers. Everybody's dancing around. We're dancing up in the stands. You guys are dancing down on the field, man. How much fun was that moment? And just how much fun is it to look back on those memories of just all those kind of fun sideline locker room moments that you had in Eugene?
Man, it's great. And just as good as those moments on the field, I had off the field with my teammates, man. That's why we still talk today, all connected, because those moments on the field are like the epitome of special, because you spend all these time with these people, like, you know, they become your real family. Like, the guys you hang out with outside facility, they a real family. So, you know, when you got the team like that, you play harder, and those moments just get special because we all are having a good time. We work hard that week. Because Oregon State, my freshman year, beat us the year before at Oregon State. And they thought they was going to bring that to Eugene. So we was turned on the sideline, man. I had a good time, man. I did.
Yeah, I heard it was raining touchdowns that day, but it never rains in Autzen Stadium, though. So, you know, I still got to check the facts on that one. I guess it's touchdowns, it's allowed. So before we get out of here, let you go. Thank you again for joining us, and really appreciate your openness. I know you mentioned before the interview you were thinking about doing your own podcast, and I want you to know all our Once a Duck fans would be behind it. I think you should get that started whenever you feel ready, because you've been a great guest. And before Sam can steal it away from me, I just got to ask you, what is your favorite uniform ever in the history of University of Oregon?
That I've worn or ever?
Ever.
It's got to be the breast cancer one this week. It would be the old one, but this one is just ridiculous. Like, and I really wish I would have got the swag that. It's like they got the cleats, the bottom of the cleats yellow, pink. So, like, everything is just going to be different, especially when they get that camera right. You know how I look. So, that's one of my favorite. But that I've worn, I would say Nebraska, when we played Nebraska. With the yellow stump out cancer, those were tough. They had the chrome Nike check, like the college football playoff that year. Those was nice.
Oh man, Jordan, those were a great look. I know one of my favorite jerseys that I have hanging in my closet is the Nightmare Green number 3, that number 3 that you wore your senior season. Last one I've got for you before you get out of here. What went into that decision? You were 34, you transitioned to number 3. What was the reasoning behind that? And were you able to get one of those, or do we have to be able to send you one of those number 3 jerseys?
I still got a lot of them, actually. But the decision, man, I always wanted to be single digit. And I always talked about it with the coaches, but I never felt like I really deserved it until I worked hard enough in off season and seen the improvement. And that number 3, like the season that I played, it wasn't stat wise the biggest that I could have had, but that work I put in, and then the practice tapes from that time, and then some games, you know, I had a better performance than others, but as a whole year, I feel like I put in enough work to finally earn a single digit. And Coach Cristobal let me do it. Thankful for that. And I mean, that was like a dream, man, wearing number 3. So I put it on. I felt good, man. And I looked kind of slim for the first time in pictures at Oregon. I felt slim. So that's what that was about.
Well, man, you certainly rocked that uniform and everyone you were in. I enjoyed watching your time at Oregon and enjoyed this interview just as much. Thank you for coming on with us. And as always, once a duck, always a duck, brother. Hope to see you this weekend.
Yes, sir. Let's go Ducks.
Wow, one of my favorite Ducks from the last couple of years, and a guy I'm glad I did not have to block. Thanks, Jordan, for coming on. A guy we've been talking about having on ever since we started the show, and you know, the star in my mind from that Husky Hate Week game for that fourth down play, man.
Well, Jordan's always been a personality guy, always been a fun guy, and I was really glad we were able to get him on here this week. Glad he was able to talk about what this upcoming game, what this look meant to him, and really, really excited to see if all that forethought plays out on Saturday. Very interested to see how this game goes. Very interested also to hear some of your favorite answers to our Once a Duck question tweet of the week. Duck fans, ahead of this top 10 matchup with UCLA, what's the biggest factor in determining who will be the winner of this game? Also, do you have a favorite college game day moment?
So my favorite one, at least, is I guess the first one that really got brought up was one word: defense. Whichever defense can stop or can slow the opposing offense best wins the game, and that's from at Eliason Jason Eliason. Thank you for that. I agree. Whichever slows down the other offense, but who knows? It could just be neither does. It could just be a shootout. So I guess whoever stops slows the other team down more could be interpreted a lot of ways, because you know, we've also seen Oregon in the first half of the Wazoo game and against Georgia, rack up a lot of yards successfully and not be able to punch it in the red zone where it matters. So slowing down will be important. I also just think turnovers are going to be key.
I think that's going to be a huge factor in this ball game. One tweet that I saw that really stuck out to me, KFP at MCW7979. Best thing, in my opinion, is controlling the run game on both offense and defense. Whoever runs the ball better wins. And I can't agree with this anymore, especially in what's going to be a rainy day, what's going to be a weather-induced ball game. The air game might not be working quite as well as the coaches would like, as the quarterbacks would like. So I think that work on the ground is going to be huge. Containing a really, really talented UCLA group of running backs will be massive for this Oregon team, especially out on the edges where we know Chip Kelly loves to get his athletic players the ball and get them working. If they're bouncing the run outside all day long, it could be a long day for the Ducks. But Oregon's got a pretty fantastic trio, foursome, fivesome of players that can run the ball as well. Whether it's Whittington, whether it's Irving, whether it's Bo Nix, whether it's Dollars, whether it's James, whoever it might be, Oregon can run the ball. They can do it in a whole lot of different ways. I see both teams racking up a ton of yards in that department, probably more than each will have in the air. So I think that definitely controlling the run game, offense, defense will be huge.
Yeah. All right. Another one that addressed the game day in particular, at Busking Teacher said, my freshman year of high school was 2007 when game day came to Cal and the set was in Alton Baker Park. The south gate to Autzen was left open, so a few of us ventured in and ran down the west tunnel onto the field the middle of the night under the lights. And I remember that game because I was a recruit there that entire season. If I'm not mistaken, I think that's the first time they had the O up on Autzen Stadium for a game specifically for that shot in College Game Day, and it's been iconic ever since, even more iconic before, but man, that was a special day. Even though the Ducks didn't come out with the win, the Cam Colvin fumble in the back of the end zone to become a touchback instead of a touchdown, man, that was a tough outcome. But College Game Day being there was a tremendous experience, and it really, you know, even though it was a loss, those were two top programs that you could see at that time were destined for big things that year, all things health-wise concerned, if they kept going.
Man, another little tidbit on that O, it's the exact same reason why the O is on Autzen is exactly why it's on Lillis as well, because since they moved Game Day to the Quad and they've been doing it there, University wants people to know where they're at. So they keep that big yellow O right there in the background to let everybody know. The last one that I got for you, Nick, from Ducks for Life at Ducks for Life 4. Limit the explosive runs of Charbonnet and contain DTR as best as possible. I cannot agree with this more. A guy like Dorian Thompson-Robinson, we talk about it every year when Oregon plays UCLA. Such an athletic guy, such a talented guy, the kind of guy Chip Kelly absolutely loves at quarterback. Containing him, keeping him in the pocket, preventing him from, well, doing what he did to Washington, frankly, will be huge.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, and we've got plenty of great responses, and a lot of people just saying the same thing. We got to contain DTR, basically need to get the run game established more than their run game, shut their run game down with Charbonnet, and people would be feeling pretty good. But I think there's a palpable excitement for this game, kind of a nervousness. I know the weather could be a factor. I think there's a lot of possibility there for some turnovers for both teams when it can get a little bit, but yeah, I'm not worried about it being rainy in Autzen Stadium ever, but just saying it has the potential, and it's not something that either of these teams has really had to face yet this year.
Well, I think that atmosphere-wise, this will probably be one of the more crazy games both of these teams are a part of. 12:30, everybody's going to be rested, but that's still enough time to get your be loud juice in you, if you know what I mean. It'll be a fun one. It'll be a loud one. DTR coming in. He's had a really, really big season, 15 touchdowns, only 2 interceptions, 15-10 in terms of yards. But Bo Nix on the other side, he has had a comparable season in terms of production, 15-26 for him in terms of yards, 12 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. The play of these two quarterbacks will be huge, two guys that can absolutely wing the ball but can also get outside of the pocket and cause problems with their legs. That individual matchup will be huge in this ball game, and also, I'm really interested to see how the Oregon secondary plays in this ballgame. This was a group that played their best game of the season against Arizona, now going up against a talented receiving core, including Bobo, a guy who has 385 yards, 5 touchdowns on the season. I'm very, very excited to see what they will be able to do. And maybe, you know, if a guy wearing number 23 who used to play for UCLA might have a couple words of advice, either for those corners or for the coaching staff in general, is how to contain this UCLA offense.
Yeah, I really did want to mention, I want to see how we can establish our receivers against their defense, especially too, and tight ends. I know the run game is going to be important. It's going to be exciting to see Noah and Bucky get some carries and hopefully some big runs and punch it in down there with our jumbo package or whatever we have planned for UCLA. But really, really want to see Franklin have a couple really, really big plays that break the defense, Hudson that, you know, stretches the defense out, and then, man, get our tight ends established early and often, and especially in the red zone. Feed Ferg, man. Feed Ferg.
Well, Ferguson's going to be big in this game. This could really be a tight end kind of ball game for both of these teams. Two teams that have very talented tight end rooms and that like to use them in a variety of ways. For Oregon, what I think will be huge will not only be the receiving end for the tight ends, guys like Ferguson, McCormick out there doing their job, but also seeing how they block as well. Seeing Matavao out there blocking Herbert, whether it's from the tight end position or from a fullback position. All of these guys doing their jobs will be a key to this ball game. One of the most important aspects of it, I think. I'm really, really, really interested, though, to see the coaching matchup in this game. I think it's going to be an absolute chess match. Dan Lanning has proven so far that he probably is a better situational head coach, a better play call, not necessarily play call, but a better operator of his team than I think we would have given him credit for going into this season, especially for a guy who really has been a head coach in 6 ball games ever. It's impressive to see what he's been able to do. He learned from that first game. Him and his entire staff have done a great job, whether it is Dillingham, the guy who is calling that offense, whether it is the game plans defensively that Lanning and Tosh have been able to put together. Then, on the other side, you got a seasoned vet, a guy who's coached and won Rose Bowls, coached in a national championship game, and has turned this UCLA team around and made them the real Chip Kelly team that they are now. I think it's going to be a really, really interesting coaching matchup, and I'm very excited to see how it turns out and to see which staff is able to gain the advantage over the other, both teams coming off a bye.
Yeah, well, hey, man, and with that bye, I'm excited to see the health of the team, see who's available, see some guys bouncing back. You know, we've talked about every week since Steven Jones has been out that, you know, the line has had to shuffle some things around, but hopefully we get a couple of guys back this week, and really good, you know, in terms of not having to have Manning out of this game. Glad that that penalty was in the first half of the last game, so it doesn't carry over. And speaking on health, I promised in the first half, but brought out the good luck UCLA boot, undefeated, and for a long time still had some of that 2012 Rose Bowl confetti in there. So inaugural Pac-12 boot right there. Still never took it out because I was like, man, first of all, I don't know how. Second of all, like, what a memory, right? So retired this one after 2 games.
You're going to be wearing that this weekend, right? Tell me you're wearing that.
With College game day out there, man, and the way my ankle has been recently, I might have to. I definitely might have to. The problem is I can never find what I did with the opposite one. So I'm going to be out there with like a you know, a peg leg type limp going on.
It's not going to be so much of a clip clop walking around. It's just going to be a clip squish. And I'm looking forward to seeing that, Nick. I'm looking forward to seeing that and seeing you in a toga. I think it's just going to be a great game day experience overall. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I mean, we got to take a minute to talk about it. College game day is coming. We've said it over and over, but my goodness, that means the eyes of the nation from 6 a.m. Pacific to 9 a.m. Pacific will be focused squarely on Eugene, Oregon. I mean, really, who watches Big Noon Fox, whatever the heck it is? No one's checking that out. Everybody's watching game day. We know this. Everybody's going to be in town. Chris, Kirk, Lee Corso, Pat McAfee, the entire crew is going to be in Eugene. It's going to be so much fun. The Duck fans, you know, will be out there and crazy. I have no doubt a couple of Bruins will slip through the cracks and show up as well. It's going to
be a Washington State flag somewhere.
You know, old Crimson's got to fly. And at this point, I honestly just respect the fact that they've kept it going. Credit to them. Old Crimson will be out there somewhere. I'm sure Nick and I will both be out there with a couple of last minute sketch together signs. It'll be a whole lot of fun to be able to check out that experience, check out the ball game. But Nick, it is that time. It's the time where we have to talk about how we think this game will unfold, what will occur, the final score. May I remind you, because I'm the one talking right now, I did correctly predict Oregon versus UCLA last season. I am still riding on that wave, and I will until I get another one correct, which probably won't be for a while, but I'm excited to hear your prediction for this ball game. What do you think is going to happen between the Ducks and the Bruins?
Well, I think this game's going to come all down to turnovers, and I think it's going to be a pretty close game, and hopefully one the Ducks can start early and keep a lead in, because, you know, if there are sloppy conditions, it's always better to have that advantage. I'm excited for the coaching matchup, like we've mentioned before, really getting to see what wrinkles we throw in this week for UCLA, because you know they've probably seen something in film that they must like, and I'm really excited to hopefully see our defensive back step up. I think with the energy of Austin Stadium, and despite the continued improvement of DTR, I just see him having at least a couple mistakes here that cost them the ball game. And I have it going 42 Ducks, 31 Bruins.
This is going to be a real, really tough ball game. I have no doubt about that. I think that this is going to be a game that conditions don't help. I think it's going to be a game that the fans do help. Final score on my end, Oregon 37, UCLA 31. I think it's going to be a really tight ball game. I think that that 6-point line is really, really fair. That spread makes a whole lot of sense to me. 6 points feels about right. I think that it will be the type of ball game where, because of how solid each defense is, because of the fact that, again, it doesn't rain in Oz Stadium, but there might be some pouring going on in the forecast, it will be a little bit tough. I see a Camden Lewis game being necessary here. I keep saying we're going to have some Camden Lewis moments, and by God, I think this is the week that it really does happen. It's going to be a tight ball game, but I think that a late possession, a late turnover, something's going to turn this Oregon's way. The Ducks escape with a victory in this top 10 matchup.
Oh, man, love it. I think we're both right on the same page there for seeing UCLA come in and get about, you know, 31 points, but we'll see. And I hope either one of us is correct, but hey, let us know what you think the game is going to be. We're going to be rushing down to Autzen Stadium here pretty soon, right after you guys are able to watch this. And hopefully we get to see as many of you there as possible. Let us know what you thought of the episode, future guests you want to see. Make sure you're like, shared, and subscribe to our videos. And man, we just passed 200 subscribers on YouTube a couple weeks ago, and 2,000 followers on Twitter. So thank you guys for that, and hope you join us at the game. And once a duck, always a duck.